Welcome to Influential Visions. Here, we interview futuristic leaders who share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. My name is Nathaniel Schooler, and I am your host today. Welcome.
Hey.
Today, I'm joined by Yael Tamar. Excuse me if I've pronounced that wrong. I'm trying to get it right. It's not an easy... Yael, right?
Yael. Tamar, you got it right.
Cool. And we're going to talk about how technology is transforming complete industries. And obviously, you know, go back over a few problems that have been in from the past. And those that aren't geared up for it have failed, right? And they're going to continue to fail. So... I mean, I know you're big into retail real estate blockchain and stuff, yeah. And you know, I'm quite interested to hear about that because real estate is really changing right now, and I think your solution sounds quite interesting. And it's around property tech, right? Whatever that is.
Correct. Yes, we're a prop tech company, or a company on the intersection of fintech, prop tech, and blockchain.
Okay. So the product that you've got is not just like some kind of Bitcoin thing. Yeah. It's actually a tangible product, right? Actually based upon bricks and mortar. It isn't like a non-tangible kind of, well, this is how much Bitcoin's worth because there are only however many Bitcoins in the world. This is like, well, this is based upon a real, tangible, solid asset, right? Is that right. Fair to say?
So essentially what we're doing is we're placing real estate on blockchain, but at the end of the day, it's a real estate product. We are creating a new asset class that allows us to break real estate, to break property into fractions, then market these fractions to investors, as you would market units, let's say apartments or offices or a whole building, right? You can now invest in AAA assets, you can invest in digital assets. So if you guys know what real estate syndication is, property syndication basically means that a lot of investors are coming together to invest in a property, right? So you are probably familiar with property crowdfunding. There are many crowdfunding platforms out there. So that's also a kind of a syndication. So when we syndicate project, we tie your ownership to what's called a smart contract via what's called a smart contract on the blockchain, and that creates a digital security, digital asset that you will hold and you own. So now you're an owner of a fraction of a property, and it's recorded on the blockchain inside the digital ledger. It's recorded inside our form. You can sell it peer to peer. So that's what blockchain does. It enables us to sell assets peer-to-peer. So that's the revolutionary part of it about the real estate, that you don't have to have your money tied in for many years when you're an investor, or rather, you're able to sell fractions of your investment to other people.
Sounds very, very interesting. I know you did an episode the other day on this. And so if people want to kind of get deeper into that subject, then they can sort of click the link that I'm going to drop somewhere or other. And check that out. Absolutely. Right. But I mean, over the last sort of, you know, however many decades, right, businesses have been dying quicker and quicker. Yeah. And, you know, I don't like the word disruption, right. But like, that's basically what's happened since, you know, Kodak and you know, whole markets have just completely changed, you know, overnight, really. I mean, in England, we've got the government encouraging local restaurants and pubs and stuff to actually do home deliveries and pickup services and these kind of things. But There are masses and masses of changes going on. You know, like, we're rethinking the hotels, the offices, the shops, and other like bricks and mortar kind of businesses, right?
Right. Yeah. So
what's it like in your mind around this?
So first of all, I don't mind the word disruption. In fact, I like it because it starts with a D. And I say that every business that wants to stay afloat needs to keep track of three things. the first D is data. You have to understand what's happening in the industry and how people do things. And real estate specifically, it's how people buy, sell, and use property, invest in property. What is the data showing? Number two is demographics. Because this generation, or even millennials, right? I don't know, my generation is millennials, are buying property completely, in a completely different way than the previous generation. In fact, they're not buying property for various reasons we can discuss. Look at how new generations and are using the product, right? And the third one, the third D is the disruptive technology. So look at how technology is changing your business. And if you don't utilize technology, you're simply going to stay behind or be run over by the Netflixes and the Amazons of this world. So those are the three D's. Now, in terms of specifically hotels, offices, other commercial real estate, COVID-19 changed everything from people learning how to do digital transformation, right? Companies doing digital transformation, finally, after, let's say, 10 years that everybody's been talking about it, yeah. People learn to work from home. Teams learn to communicate. Video software is king, right? So what happened was the complete acceleration of this market, which made many offices obsolete, right? So what's going to happen now? Are we going to keep building these huge towers, or are they going to be converted to residential space? We don't know. What I know is that there are some companies taking advantage of this trend. And for example, we had a webinar with a company called Notel, and they do flexible office spaces, so that, you know, and right now companies are going to have employees come in, let's say, in rotating shifts, so you can build an office to accommodate different things, and I think that's really cool. When you're talking about hotels, even before COVID-19, you saw the disruption in the market with Airbnb, which is not even a real estate company. It's a software company that completely changed the space of hospitality. And there's some places like New York, for example, they wanted to protect their hotels and did all kinds of restrictions on Airbnb, right? And there are other companies that are like Airbnb, but let's say they're in between Airbnb and hotel chains, and they provide you, you know, they're operating their residences that are converted to these hotel rooms. And I think that trend is going to continue now. You see a lot of hotels are closing. I think those types of properties are going to really sweep in the whole industry and take it over. And, you know, of course, hotels are going to persevere as well, because there's always going to be a demand for it. But again, you might have to rethink. You might have to do a more long-term type of residence, you know. So there's going to be a lot of rethinking. So, and in the investment space, there's also going to be a lot of rethinking, because people do not like to go out and buy properties in the old way, get a mortgage, get all this paperwork done, titles and things like that. There's a much easier and better way to do it, and that's what we do. And with Salak, we enable people to invest digitally, easily, and trade in their investments. Notwithstanding that, we also are envisioning the big industry of trade, as you see in the stock market. But the stock market, I think, people investing in the stock market are very thirsty for less volatile type of marketplace, yet backed, of course, by assets. So anybody who is investing in crypto, you know, will know that it's very, very volatile and unpredictable. You don't know what's going to happen. Yeah. But in the real estate world, you know what's going to happen to a certain extent. You know that the prices are going to go down right now because the economy is down, and there's a great way to invest and maybe make money. Because as a famous quote by Baron Rothschild says, invest in blood is in the street.
Yeah.
It's literally.
Now it's literally
blood in the street. I'd love to talk to you more, Nate, about, you know, this whole trend of industries being digitized and transformed and morphing into something else because of these three Ds, but mainly the disruptive technology.
Yeah, I mean, I think looking at what you just said about the hotels and rethinking what they're doing, I mean, there will be hotels that that fold, yeah. But there will also be ones that are smart and they actually need to rethink how they clean the room. They need to rethink how they organize the availability of rooms, how they potentially allow certain numbers of people in the lifts. They have hand sanitizer, you know, there are all sorts of the, but the thing is that people should have been washing their hands properly anyway. Yeah. Like, I'm not being funny. Yeah. You know, but we're not going to get into that. Right. But, but I think, you know,
slippery road.
Well, it is. Yeah. But the major problem actually is the cultures within these businesses. I mean, I did some research, like we talked before the show about Netflix and Blockbuster, right? And actually the Blockbuster CEO was a fantastic executive. Yeah. He grew 7-Eleven franchises in multiple markets. Yeah. He was a very seasoned executive. And actually it wasn't his fault that it didn't work. He wanted to pioneer the digital approach. He tried to do that. Yeah. The major problem was the late fees. People hated being charged late fees, yeah, and it really upset them. So that was Netflix's first thing was, well, you can have this CD, this DVD, but there are no late fees and we'll send it to you in the post, yeah? That was the first way they got in, right? But like they knew what they were doing. Yeah. They had a clear strategy that kind of went from there to where they're at now, right? But it's like Blockbuster, they had a rogue investor. He decided that he was going to drag his heels at every single thing that the CEO wanted to do. And it was very, very unfortunate that he actually managed to do that. He killed the morale of that company before they had a chance to change. They had a process. They had a program that was actually working and they were going to make it work. Yeah. And it's really unfortunate how that happened. But it goes back to culture. Yeah. Everything's about culture. And if these businesses don't turn around and say, well, actually, we're going to help our people work from home. We're going to send them a new laptop table. We're going to let them expense a new screen or two or a desk or, you know, whatever. Right. But that's the kind of thing that they should be allowed to do. And I'm quite excited about the future. I think this could solve many of the housing problems that we're facing, most certainly. But the major thing is you can solve housing problems.
Yeah,
but you can't solve
next to the office. You shouldn't live in an overcrowded city. You can move wherever you want. You know, I think that it's going to make things more effective in the long term, maybe our lives even better in the long term. So, you know, there's always a silver lining with these disruptions. You know, they definitely cause a lot of pain and a lot of misery for many people. But for, you know, economies as a whole, sometimes you can consider these disruptions kind of a calibration tool, you know, to tune into what's really important, right? And the balance and productivity. I noticed myself personally, I love the the co-working space, and we used to work from WeWork, but now that we work from home, we discovered that we work much, much better from home without all the disruption and the chatter and everything else, much more productive, maybe less fun, but, you know, as a company, we're definitely doing much better right now than we were 2 months ago, so, you know, there's always a silver lining for everything. You know, too bad for co-working space, but good for the economy overall.
Yeah, for now it's bad for co-working space, but the ones that hold on are going to be the ones that actually do really, really well from this, right?
Yeah,
because
exactly.
but then the whole definition of like how you're using your office building is going to change. So then perhaps you're going to reduce the amount of people on each floor. You're going to change your setup, the way that it works. I don't know, because we don't really know like what's going to happen.
It's going to be based on data, right? And I know a few companies that are extracting data from the offices, for example, you know, putting in some IoT, Internet of Things sensors to tell us how it's being used. And you can quickly make changes if you have like a flexible workspace, quickly make changes depending on what they recommend. So specifically, I know a few companies that that are doing that right now. Many companies are taking this as an opportunity to grow their products or pivot their products.
Yeah, very much. I've heard of restaurants actually who own shops changing the way that they are located. Yeah. So, yeah. For example, you might originally have walked into the front of a shop mm-hmm. or the front of a restaurant, but then they've just swapped the two over. So then now you've got a shop which was a restaurant, but it's run like by the same people. Yeah. And it's like, delivery services are going to do really well. I know it's difficult for a lot of people, yeah. But the thing is that, you know, providing they're going to be able to eat, and that's my biggest worry, is, you know, in the paper this morning, they were saying like, 20 million people aren't going to be able to eat, yeah, or something. I mean, it's going to be crazy, the fallout from this. I mean, I saw a video of New York of people queuing up just for some food, yeah. They were queuing up for government food, and then the food that they gave them in a bag was just some sort of joke, yeah. Like, it's just ridiculous. But it's like, I don't know. It's very difficult to know what this is going to lead to. I mean, certainly there will be successful people. People will come out in a better place than they were before. More millionaires were made, you know, in the Great Depression than ever before, right, at that point in history. So, yeah, it's a tricky one, right?
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely. So I think to your point about the opportunity, I know the real estate market is experiencing an unprecedented wave of opportunity, and people are just waiting. You know, whoever, obviously right now cash is king, and whoever has a way to get liquidity will definitely make a lot of money in the market. And that's why my mission is to bring this opportunity to as many people as possible, and not only leave it to the select few. So, you know, if people have $10,000, $20,000 that they can invest, they want to enable them to do that. If people have assets or own hotels or own some sort of a business that they need liquidity, we'll be able to tokenize and enable them to refinance through this process and get liquidity and get their customers to support these businesses in these needed times. We actually reached out to several municipalities offering them a solution. We worked with Tel Aviv municipality to create a solution for business support network, offering businesses loans and maybe equity investment. So there are many things that you can do with this technology that you couldn't do before in the previous crises.
It sounds very interesting. So it could actually be a time where you could say, for example, you own 50 properties. I mean, some of my family own a lot of houses. Yeah. You could actually use this to put some money in the bank to keep the rent, you know, keep the mortgages paid. Yeah. Because obviously if you've got mortgages and your tenants aren't paying, you need to fill that gap somewhere. Right. I mean, I know I've got a friend in Canada that's got multiple properties. She was saying the other day that she's got problems with tenants not paying the bills, and then the government are actually stepping in and like loaning them $40,000 or something like that. But then that's only going to last a certain amount of time, and we don't know how this is going to actually play out, right? Like, this is uncharted territory. Yeah. So say you were one of my family, right? And you owned 50 properties. Yeah. Would you refinance, maybe grab a couple million and then go and buy some more based upon cash value that you'd extracted using the block or what?
Yeah, you can totally do that. You can collateralize the property and then you can refinance. The only problem right now with that is that a lot of properties have been devalued. That's a big, big problem in the mortgage market as well, because people are not able to pay the mortgages. And even if they sell their house, they're not able to pay because their values are much lower than when they took the mortgages.
Got you. Equity, yeah.
Yeah, so you could do that, but the issuance of tokens really depends on the market valuation. So they would expect to probably get lower, but the banks are doing the same thing, right? The banks are giving loans based on the current value.
Right.
However, The only difference is that, let's say you, if somebody buys a token at this reduced price, when the market goes up, they'll be able to resell it. So there's definitely opportunity here for investors. You'll be able to attract investors.
I get you. That's super, super smart. So let's have a little think about this. So this is quite an innovative use of assets. There's no doubt about that. It's a smart way to release some cash, right? But like, do you think this is just like a leveling off of overinflated property prices anyway? I mean, like if you look at the UK, right? Like we've like, people are like, oh, well, look how much my house is worth. And it's like, well, look how much money I'm going to make from this. And it's like, well, perhaps that's just the wrong way to look at property anyway, like residential property.
Well, obviously the worth of your house is as much as you can get for it at that specific time, how much money somebody's willing to pay for it. And I don't know if it's overinflated, to tell you the truth. It really depends on obviously supply and demand of properties, and specifically London. You know, it's a great place for property. There's always demand. There's always people who want to be there. So, you know, who are we to say that it's too expensive or not expensive enough? You know, the only bubbles that were created, you know, in history that were definitely unjustified was, you know, the housing crisis of 2008 in the US, where the value of the properties were inflated in order
subprime mortgages. Yeah,
subprime crisis, exactly, to kind of build the value in the bonds. And that was definitely very detrimental, as we saw. People lost their complete faith in the banks and then the economy overall. But in the absence of this, you know, I know that sometimes you have some sort of coalitions, maybe of property owners that want to keep the property prices up. But it's not easy to do because in the big markets, because people want to sell property at the end of the day when they need to. So I think that the data is going to be able to give us a much better indication on what the prices should be in different markets. And it's going to create a much more efficient way to buy and sell, because there is a lot of friction in the market right now with buying and selling properties, at least residential. And there's not a lot of, there is data in the residential market, of course, on the properties that are sold and bought, but there's not a lot on the properties basically in the market, or like what the pricing was initially, and then let's say maybe they went down from it to sell. So we need a lot more data, and we're going to have that with blockchain-based marketplace.
Right, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think certainly over in Spain and other parts of Europe, properties are much cheaper in most places than they are over here, right? And it's like, well, it's basically... like you say, it's supply and demand, right? But like with all of these people who are going to be out of work and things like this, a lot are going to lose their homes. Yeah. So, you know, perhaps this is just the readjustment that the property market needs. Yeah. Because actually, if you look at the prices of homes versus the price of how much money you get, well, how much money you get paid per month. Yeah. It's completely different to when my parents like bought. They bought a house for like £8,000 or something, like £10,000. Yeah. Like all those years ago. Do you know what I mean? So, and a lot of other countries though, like Denmark and places like that, the government has actually managed the economy very well. So that those houses are not ridiculously expensive, and you can actually, over a 30-year mortgage, you can actually afford to buy your own house and have a very nice standard of living. Yeah. Instead of putting most of your money towards your mortgage or your rent over here, because it's actually out of kilter with how much it's really should be costing you. Yeah.
I don't know how much it really should be costing, because people want to live in London for whatever reason, right? The salaries there in the UK are much higher than they are in Spain or other places. I don't know if it's really the government policy. Some of the policies are concerned with how much you can build and how fast you can get permits. So that also has to deal with the prices. But in general, it's a function of how much people are willing to pay for living in a certain place, right? If they're buying a house for a residence. And a lot of people are willing to live in London. And don't forget, Nathaniel, the population growth, right? In the last 20 years, the population, the global population has grown tremendously, probably around 20%, if I'm not mistaken. So that's something also taken into account. Probably London population has grown tremendously, and you have to put all these people somewhere. So the prices are definitely growing, and in most places, you probably should be able to pay off your house in 30 years mortgage. But let's even think about it. Do you need to own a house?
The whole point. That's the whole point. It depends on your lifestyle and how you live. Like, if you want to move around a lot, perhaps have a house over here and a house over there, and things like this.
So most people, obviously it's also an investment. It's an asset. It's an asset with which you can which you can leverage, get loans, and it's an asset which you can, in time of need, sell and use the funds or reinvest if it grows in value. So first and foremost, it's an asset, and I think that's also how millennials and even the younger generations are going to start thinking about real estate, not necessarily your place of residence, which is actually in our nomadic culture is changing all the time. So, you have a place somewhere, you rent somewhere else. And then the place that you bought doesn't necessarily have to be residential real estate. Maybe it should be something else. Maybe it should be a diverse portfolio. So betting all your money on one asset somewhere where it could or could not generate income, you can actually invest it in a diverse portfolio of real estate assets. If real estate is what you want.
Got you. I mean, certainly with transport links and, getting better to London, you've got other bubbles that have sort of been created. But I've just found an interesting average house price to wage heat map here, right? So actually, when you're looking at London, right, it's it's 14 times the wage, yeah? But when you're looking at Scotland, it's 3 times. The wage, right? And in other parts of England, it's like 9 times, 8 times. But I think it's going to come down. I really do. But perhaps London may still weather the storm. Who's to know?
It will only come down if there's no demand, right? If less people are going to want to rent houses in London. The reason why it's 14 times because the probable 14 versus 3, right?
Scotland's quite cold though. It's a nice place, but it's quite cold.
If you buy a property, you may not be able to sell it or to rent it easily. Also, the rent that you will be able to get is probably much lower. So that's where you get the difference. You know, people are buying an asset to get an income. So at the end of the day, so London right now is offering these income levels that allow the price to be high. But you don't know if things are going to change, if people are going to start working from Scotland, and maybe that's going to be the hot place to be because it's beautiful and people would rather much rather live closer to nature. So
that's a very good. That's a very good point.
By the way, I'm not an investment advisor, and
no.
So don't take all the here with a grain of salt and get some professional investment advice.
Of course. That's the disclaimer, right? So technology is transforming complete industries, So like what other kind of things are you sort of seeing out there? I mean, I'm seeing healthcare is an interesting one with the data, with the way that Oracle have got this fantastic he's a vascular surgeon, I think, up in Birmingham or Manchester, and he's actually worked on stopping reducing the amount of amputations based upon the data that is analyzed using technology. And he's doing a fantastic job. I'm actually going to interview him in about 2 or 3 weeks' time. So that's quite interesting. He's called, let me see, where is his name? Nasir Ahmad. And he's a vascular surgeon, like I say. Super, super interesting. He's director of Manchester Amputation Reduction Strategy, right? So that's interesting. I mean, I think healthcare is a big one, I think, from where I'm sitting. Because if they can have pictures and then the big data analysis can analyze those pictures for past cases, then they can come up with, you know, fairly good certainty that there are certain problems that human being has, right? But is there anything else that you sort of think is interesting around new transformations?
Well, obviously, healthcare and epidemiology is a big one right now. Trying to understand and make sense of this incomplete data, which is just the start of all problems, right? Yeah. But besides that, I see every single industry as probably having a major disruptive event and a transformative event, probably once in a decade. And then you see companies like, for whatever reason, Netflix won over Blockbuster, but you cannot deny that. They not only understood that streaming should be done online, but also they understood that they're not a streaming company, but they are a content company. Like almost everybody in the video industry is going to be right now producing their own content. I'm not saying they're doing that extremely well, but they are trying, and I give them props for that.
Yeah. But you do know though that Amazon owns IMDb, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
And that is a very strategic move. I only found that out about a year and a half ago. Yeah, and that is a very clever move. I don't like Jeff Bezos as an individual because he wants to eat everyone's lunch. Yeah. Like he just wants to eat everything that's out there. Oh, yeah.
He deserves it. I don't know.
I like Amazon. I use Amazon. I buy stuff on Amazon and, you know, look at how it's disrupted things, right?
Yeah. Amazon is definitely the number one stock right now in the product and out there. And not only because it's convenient and nice, it's mainly because unfortunately in the crisis, smaller guys are falling out, and the bigger guys like Amazon is taking all this business. So that's why Amazon is thriving. But you know what many people may not realize that Amazon has other business ventures as well. So obviously the cloud. So they are owning all the space where all the content is produced. Well, not all, but much of the content is produced. And number two is the major, major supply chain business, right? All of the deliveries. And of course, that's another industry that's gone undisrupted for many years. And Amazon moved out a lot of players in that industry. And not only that, I wouldn't be surprised if they would by themselves be moving into, let's say, driverless trucking space. You know, like Uber and Lyft and other companies are trying to penetrate, but I think if Amazon does that, you know, they're going to be the winner. So they're known for investing in disruptive technologies. They're also known for disrupting processes. And so I wonder if they're also going to go into payment, maybe, you know, issuing currency or, you know, just selling fractions of real estate. State on Amazon, they could do everything, and I would watch out for all these tech giants that have you know technology and young minds and mindset to change things. I'm really excited about seeing it. Right, I'm really excited about seeing it happen because we learn from one industry to the other what could be done.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. And that's why, like, knowing so many different people, talking to so many intelligent people is so interesting, because you might see an idea that's over there and think, well, actually, that would really work in my industry, right?
Yeah. You also see, another thing that really is helping some of these new models is the complementary businesses that, you know, may not even have thought about before. So, you know, for me as a business traveler, for example, it was hard at times to use Airbnb and also some other apps that provide, let's say, maybe more business type or luxury type accommodations, because I have a big need of leaving my luggage somewhere and they don't provide this service, right? With a hotel, you know, you can leave your luggage, come back, and usually I have like a day or 2 day, 3 day business trips, and every minute and second is, you know, I'm doing meetings and stuff. So then we discovered an app that allows you to go to a nearby hotel. It's a geolocation app. I can't remember the name, but you can search for it, and you can leave your luggage in a hotel, pay a few dollars, and then come back and pick it up later. And they find the nearest place where they could accept your luggage. And that disrupted everything, because I personally, I don't love staying in hotels. I love to stay in the middle of the city and the action and to be very, very close to everything. And some places very expensive. And for a startup, you want to keep the cost low. So when I discovered that's an option, that's it for me. You know, from now on, or in most cases, I'm trying to get that type of accommodation, especially if we have a big team coming, right? We have a few members of the team. It's easier for us all to stay in one place and kind of communicate and work together. And so that actually was really cool. So when you look at these technologies, for example, drone deliveries, right? So if you didn't have another company developing a drone and all the programming and software that goes along with it, you wouldn't be able to have like these efficient 1-hour deliveries. And drones used by police force and just, you know, all these new technologies that you can see and you say, wow, if we have this, then now this is possible. So when we have blockchain, now we can trade peer-to-peer fractional real estate, enabling people to get liquidity when they need and enabling new business models, new asset classes, new ways of ownership, and new ways of making money. So we don't even have all the answers. We want to come with us, real estate guys. Let's think together how we can take what we have and build additional models and products.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because they're the people that have sold the houses as well. They've sold the office buildings to the people. Yeah. So yeah. They're the ones that are going to be able to communicate to their databases. I mean, that's the thing is, it's really, because it's such a new thing. I mean, you've been going for quite a while now, but it's still, the word needs to get out because it's such a new thing. Yeah. And, you know, I'm blown away by the concept of it. I think it's fantastic. Yeah. Yeah. You know, but I mean, people, they can listen to the other podcast about that, right? So yeah. what other things are you sort of seeing in the world that's, that are exciting that you like the look of, like AR and VR and what? I mean,
I used to like AR and VR a few years ago. Now I think AI, everything's about artificial intelligence and data, really. IoT, which enable us to kind of communicate with our homes, devices, and get data. So I think the supply chain of, or the chain of communication in this world is basically going to be IoT, which picks up health data even, or, you know, what you mentioned about reducing the need for amputations. That's probably, I would guess, venture a guess, would definitely be based on a lot of data and examination of different x-rays or other sources by machines, you know, using AI in places where they could, and then using some other cutting edge technology to perform. You know, they're always coming up with amazing things in the medical field based on, you know, even mechanical engineering and this laparoscopic surgery and so on. So definitely the that stuff is exciting. And again, almost everywhere in each industry you see the data and the IoT and the AI. In general, with everything that's happening in the world, let's see, what are the exciting things that I saw recently? Okay, I think I saw something really cool happening in Japan, where they were looking at they placed some sort of a gold plated or gold stuff underground, and they were experimenting with different things. I actually should probably not be talking about it because I only read half the article, but I'll share it with you, Nate.
We can drop that in the show. In the show,
something really cool about gold and Japan. But they had the purest type of water in the world. It was so pure that it could cut metal. And I'll double check my sources, of course, to make sure that's all true. But basically, came out really funny. But in general, I have to tell you, I've been basically inside this real estate investment bubble for the last year. So you probably know much more about the cool things that are happening in the world.
Yeah, well, you certainly know a lot about technology, because I know you wrote a blog for one of our clients a while back. And, you know, I think blockchain, providing, you know, some thought is given, right, to how we use it. Yeah, like I love this user case with the beer. There's this brewery that's using like some sort of Oracle tech. I went to Open World and I learned about that, and they're tracing the beer from the actual manufacturing all the way to the bottle to the end user. So they basically know which store that bottle has actually ended up in, and like tracing that is super important. Yeah, especially if you want to like stop a product from you know, going off, or you want to recall the product. Yeah, because that's a big problem with supermarkets. If they have a product recall, yeah, it costs them an absolute fortune. But if you can actually limit that to specific batches, and you know where those batches went to, which store that batch actually went to, if it's made in that kind of way, you're going to be able to reduce that sort of problem in future. Yeah,
absolutely. So that type of supply chain tracking is called provenance, and that's first been used with blockchain on the diamond market to reduce the blood diamond phenomenon. And it's been successfully used to track different gems and products, beer or olive oil or wine, right? You can do all of that. The reason why this has become a really big thing last year, or maybe about 2 years ago, was when Walmart partnered with a lot of giants from the food world, that Unilever and Kroger and just basically a lot of companies that are generally competitive with each other, and they all came together and they said, we're going to try this product and do tracking of food to reduce foodborne illness and foodborne bacteria, right? There's things like Listeria that are super dangerous. Apparently 1 in 10 people in the US is affected by it and gets sick every year.
Wow.
And millions of people die from this preventable challenge, right? So with provenance, you can quickly take these products off the shelves. So not take all of the products, but just the effective product. You can also pinpoint the origination of the bacteria or what happened. You know, it was actually, I had a business a few years back importing frozen food supplement into Israel. And one of the biggest problems that we had is that, somewhere along the supply chain, it would defrost and spoil a bunch of the product.
Right.
So we had no idea where, we had no idea if it was in the warehouse, it was along the supply chain or in the distribution. We had no idea what was happening. And it basically, you know, hurt our business a lot. So we had to move out of the frozen supplements and go into the dry or something else. So all of this can be solvable with data and the provenance.
Yeah. I was just looking up something, because there's another Oracle customer that I was talking to. His name's Doug. It's basically a company called, I think it's called Circulor or something like that. And yeah. I couldn't find the name, but I should have prepped a bit better for this probably, but he's super interesting because his company traces items that are going into Volvo cars. Yeah. So they're actually tracing like the battery technologies. Yeah. So they're tracing the ingredients that go, not the ingredients, but the raw materials, right.
There's
that
go in
batteries.
Yeah. So
then they're preventing child labor and because there are certain things that go into these I forget which country, it's somewhere in Africa actually, and a lot of it is sold on the black market with kids that are actually digging up these minerals and stuff. Yeah, right,
absolutely.
Yeah,
and it's in the majority of our phones, unfortunately, and computers and stuff like that, so that definitely needs to be addressed. And I heard about these initiatives for car parts specifically, and I think it's going within in the next 5 years, it's going to be standard. So that's another really good use of blockchain and the use case. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are all sorts, right? Like there's, you know, it's basically you can trace anything that you want to trace, right? And track anything you want to track. Yeah. For security purposes. Yeah.
Yeah. For security or for provenance, you know, to prevent diseases and prevent exploitation, as you mentioned.
Super. So I'll drop the link in for this episode you recorded the other day about you know, more in depth detail around your product that you're offering.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Well, it's more about, you know, the real estate industry, where it's going and how blockchain is transforming it. So there are actually a lot of people at this podcast, around 150 that joined, and they kept asking questions nonstop. So I just decided I'm going to do this throughout the webinar. And so it's really interesting, because I'm sure that, you know, whatever they're asking is probably whatever you guys want to know.
Wow, that's super interesting. Super interesting. Well, thank you. That's been fantastic. And I'll drop the link somewhere at the bottom.
Yeah, thanks for having me and also teaching me these really cool things about Blockbuster, Netflix, and
well, no one really knows that, right? And they blame the CEO of Blockbuster, but actually,
poor guy.
Yeah, it wasn't.
What's he doing now?
Well, he's retired. I think he bought some Netflix stock, actually. That's what he did. I found a blog about it, and he actually bought some Netflix stock. I'd like to talk to him. He's really cool, actually. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Keep you posted. All right. Well, let's learn from that and let that never happen to us.
Exactly. Thanks for listening. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections too. And don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen. Thank you.